and welcome again to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, the co-host, and with me today is Max Cohen and Mike Gregg. This episode will be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Wolves at Craven Cottage. However, before that, we're going to be looking back at the 1-1 draw for Fulham against Bristol City. On top of that, we have some interesting topics that we will be discussing as well. We have much to get through in this episode, but before I do anything, I have to welcome my co-host back to the show. First, Mr. Cohen, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Russ. Always a tough run of fixtures this time of year, and it doesn't get any easier playing division best side at home on the weekend, but should be a really interesting show breaking down whether we can possibly get 3 points against the top team in the league, pulling Newcastle like we did last season.
It's going to be a difficult match, Max, but the 3 points are there. If they play well and execute, they could potentially get all 3 points, and we'll go through that at the end of the show. But before I do anything else, I have to welcome back Mr. Gregg. Mike, how are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Russ. Hi, Max. Yeah, doing really well, Russ. Good to be back. It's been a while since I've been on the show, especially a preview show, and so looking forward to talking about the big game tomorrow and any other subjects you throw at us.
Well, I have a few for you, Mike, and let's get right to it. You and I were just talking off air. A constant topic has been second position for Fulham. Right now, they are 8 points away from it. It's been going back and forth. It's difficult to do. Fulham have to really go on an incredible run the rest of the way to get there. So you are someone that looks at the numbers a great deal. I think that they can contend for it. Getting it is another story. I think there are two different situations. Can they be in the mix? Potentially. But can they actually get second? I think is a different kettle of fish. So I thought it would be great to talk to you about it because you study the numbers closely. So let's talk about second. Is it realistic to talk about?
I'm afraid, it's realistic to talk about, Russ, but I'm afraid I'm the destroyer of dreams on this one. We're just that little bit too short, and I think with three teams ahead of us, really, Cardiff, Villa and Derby, I can see one of them, you know, getting into the late 80s. And for us to get to that kind of figure, to give you an example, this time last year, Russ, yep, our last 13 games, we got 27 points. So even if we match that now, you know, we're going to hit 83, which is too low for second place. You know, second place this year, I do believe, will be, you know, 86, 87 plus. I expect Cardiff to drop off. You know, they're on a decent run at the moment, but I think Villa will sneak second place. But yeah, it's just, for me, it's just that little bit out of reach. You know, we're on a great run. We're 11 games, I think it's 11 games unbeaten. And if you go back even further, you know, championship form. But then to carry that on for another 13 games, you know, we're looking at needing 33 points from those. Yeah, it's a massive call. And it's, you know, we would have to do better than Wolves have done over the season. And as good as we are, I don't think we're quite that consistent and good enough to carry on this run. So, no, I don't see second place as a possibility. I think realistically we should be going for fourth.
Okay.
So we get the home, leg second in the playoffs. I mean, the main thing is to get there first, just get in the playoffs. but I said fourth, if you remember, Russ. I said
at
the beginning
remember.
Of the season, I've always said fourth would be our position because of the worst style, I think, the way we play. And, you know, we had a little bit of a blip a few games into the season that cost us. But, yeah, I still see that as realistic. But second place, no.
It's funny, Mike, because I've wanted to believe that this is possible. And I would be looking on Twitter and you would be going through the numbers and you would give me the knock of reality, you know, what I needed. Because, you know, Max and I have done a show when we're talking about can we contend, and I said yes. But then I would go on Twitter, like I mentioned, and I'd see you. And you just put it all into perspective. Can it happen? Yes, but it would have to be an incredible run. And I think fourth would be a good thing for Fulham. I agree with you there, Mike. I think fourth would be fantastic, even third. But second might be a bridge too far. But, you know, listen, you can dream. You know, it's still there, but it would have to be an incredible run. Max, I want to get your thoughts.
Yeah, I just want to take a step back for a moment and just consider, I mean, even the fact that we're having this conversation shows how much we've improved since last season.
True.
Considering last season at this point, one of our lowest points towards the beginning of March and end of February, when we were really kind of adrift of even that sixth position. And now the fact that the conversation has shifted from will we make six to will we make second shows how we have progressed, in my opinion. That being said, I do agree with Mike at second probably will be improbable. But one thing I would like to bring up is that, I mean, a lot of people would have said maybe a couple months ago, right when we lost to Sunderland, that us being fifth would be improbable. And we did go on that amazing run. So I think we see this Fulham team has the capacity to really surprise a lot of people and to go on very impressive winning runs. But I would agree it's probably not realistic. And yeah. Another point is that even throughout this run, I think we can all agree we haven't been playing our best football. And it kind of caught up to us, I think, against Bristol in midweek. And if we play like this, we're not really hitting our peaks. So that's one thing that I also say that would probably make us getting automatic promotion unlikely, is that we're not really at our best.
Okay, excellent there, Max. All right. Again, it's something that I wanted to believe that it was possible. It is possible, but it's very unlikely. And I think I finally have come to that conclusion. Even before the result of Bristol sitting in the back of my mind, I'm thinking it's there for them, but is it really? And then you get the result and it's like, no, it really isn't. They could be fairly close, but I think that it's just going to be a little too far away. That's why I wanted to start by talking about that and try to be realistic about it. And thank you to Mike Regg for really giving me my dose of realism, because that's what you do, Mike. That's what's great about you. You keep me grounded, my friend, because I was dreaming. But I need to be realistic here, so thank you for that. All right, right back to you, my friend. There was an article today on Get West London, and I'm just going to read the title and a few lines from it because I think we should be talking about this. Here's the title of the article: Fulham hosted more away fans than any other championship club last season. This is from the article. No championship club sold anywhere near as many away tickets as Fulham last season. But is that good or bad news? And that's a good line for us to talk about it, Mike. So let me ask you, is it good or bad news?
Well, I mean, there's really two arguments here. I mean, I have a lot of discussions on Twitter and on some of the forums. There's a lot of fans who think we should, you know, not allow teams like Villa and Brentford, QPR, etc., to have access to the Putney end of the way we do it. You know, they believe we should restrict it to maybe 1,500, 2,000 fans in the corner and get rid of the mixed zone or neutral zone, whatever you want to call it, and certainly not sell tickets to anyone who just wants to sit there. That should be Fulham fans. But from the club's point of view, it's income. And, you know, if Fulham fans do not want to buy seats in the Putney end, and we have the capacity to sell more tickets to the opposing team, then personally, I can see the advantages for the club. Some fans will say, you know, giving Villa 6,000 fans, you know, the noise they make will raise their team. My argument back at that is, if someone can show me some data where, you know, we give away the away end and we lose every time, or what's the difference? As I tweeted, you know, we beat Villa last week. They had 6,000 fans.
Right.
I've seen an away team at our place have about 60 fans and we've lost to them. So it doesn't really equate. And, you know, I'm someone who goes to football. And when I watch football, I don't want to see empty stands. And, you know, it raises the atmosphere. And the Fulham fans were not the That's noisiest. Right. You know, we are not. But last week we created a good atmosphere. And in the end, it's what happens on the pitch. You know, otherwise, if it's all about fans and the noise they make, then the majority of the time, teams would never get a result away from home. But also, you know, when people talk about Fulham and the noise, that's a completely different subject about acoustics at the ground and where people stand. But for me, if we can't sell the seats, then let's sell them to the opposition. And also, let me just add this bit. Lots of people talk about why can't we restrict it? You know, why isn't there segregation? The club have looked at that. But because of the footprint of the ground and downstairs behind the Putney end, there's not enough space to actually put in a hard wall or a fence to segregate fans. So whereas at other grounds, you go through a turnstile, it's walled, you can't get into other sections. At the Putney end, you cannot do that for health and safety reasons. There just isn't the ability to restrict a block or anything like that. So that's why they have the mixed zone, the neutral part. And, you know, I'm someone who sat there for 2 years in the Premier League as a season ticket holder because I came from that direction. It was cheaper. Me and my old man, we got seats there. And I have to say, mixing with away fans for 2 years was fine. Right. You know, there was only one team I always moan about and their fans, and that was Tottenham. They were the most obnoxious fans ever. But everyone else just got on with it. And, I know in America, in stadiums, you don't have the sort of away fan mentality. But, you know, everyone sits where you want to sit. And that's the way you should enjoy a game. I see nothing wrong with having rivalry next to each other. But I'm fine with it. And then if you look at the figures in that article as well, you know, after Villa, we make the most money because we've got enough space to do it. So
that's right.
For me, yeah, go ahead. If we can't sell the tickets to our own fans, if we haven't got enough fans to come through the door, then yes, if the away fan can buy them, then buy it. It makes a better atmosphere in the ground.
That's what I wanted to get from you, Mike. Does it help the atmosphere? And it sounds like based on your experience, it does. Then why not? It's a very interesting discussion. That's why I wanted to bring this up, because I know people have different views on this. Max, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, some really good points made there by Mike. And I think what this boils down to for me is that Fulham do a great job of attracting supporters, whether it's home supporters or away supporters. For many away supporters, Craven Cottage is an amazing venue to see a match, and it is for home supporters as well. I'm very confident in my belief that Craven Cottage is the best stadium in England, in my opinion, in terms of the history, in terms of the location right by the Thames, in terms of the atmosphere. And that shows that away fans make Fulham away. That's their priority for many of them. Like, whenever they're going to take a cruise down the Thames, they're going to get rent out a boat, the walk down the river to the Putney end. That is a big away day for a lot of teams in whatever league we're in. So I think that shows that Fulham is a destination, I think, in a way. And that's why you see all these fans from away teams coming to support in large numbers. And, of course, I think when you're watching a match, when you're at a match, you're always going to want to see Fulham supporters making the majority of the noise. But I think what Mike mentioned is that's kind of not really the point here. The noise has nothing to do with away supporters, given the dimensions and the acoustics of the Hammersmith end, as well as the Putney end. So the noise issue, no matter how many away fans, I think they're always going to appear louder. Is something I've read from the Fulham Supporters Trust website. They've put out reports in the past about that. And in addition, a packed stadium is always going to be better than a stadium with a lot of empty seats. And I think that's what it boils down to. Craven Cottage is a great ground. Fans of all different loyalties want to come. And I think there's nothing really wrong with that. And another point Mike said, which I think is the most important point, is how does it affect the performance on the pitch? And in my opinion, it doesn't have any effect. We're going to lose to teams that don't bring any support, and we're going to win against teams that bring a lot of support, and we're going to do the vice versa. It really doesn't have any correlation to how we play. So it's really more of an optics thing. And for me, as long as you get 3 points and we win, just like this weekend, so Villa brought, 6,000 odd fans, we beat them 2-0. Who cares how much they brought? We have the 3 points.
That's right.
We're going up in the table. That's all that matters.
Very good point by both of you. And that's why, I understand that there are different points of view on this, and you guys shared your views on this. But I think it's something that we should talk about, and I'm glad that we did. And you guys have both have experienced that atmosphere, and I appreciate you sharing your views. All right, guys, let's now, before we preview the upcoming match against Wolves, we have to look back at the 1-1 draw for Fulham Wednesday night at Bristol City. And let's just start from the beginning. Let's just get your overall view on the result. Mike, I'll go to you first. Just opening thoughts on this 1-1 draw.
I'm happy with a point from a promotion rival, especially away from home. It's always going to be a tough game, even given their their little drop in form recently. But if you'd said to me you can have a point at Bristol City, then yeah, I would have taken it even, you know, before the game, even before the Villa game. So yeah, happy with a point, and you know, 4 points from the first two in this run. So we have to be happy with it.
I agree with you, Mike. Over to you, Max. I want to get your opening thoughts on this. You and I did a preview show, and we both predicted Fulham victory, so we were both wrong. But now looking back at it, being a few days ago, I'm just thinking I'm happy with a point. And we're going to talk a little bit about the performance coming up. But just your opening thoughts on the 1-1 draw.
Yeah, what stood out to me was how accurate Gregor McGregor was before the match, the columnist for the Bristol Post, when he said Bristol are almost a perfect team to counteract Fulham.
Yeah,
I think they really unsettled us more than any other team has in recent months.
Matchup.
In the sense that, exactly, the matchup, the physical style of play, the emphasis on set pieces, and for me, the performance of Bobby Reid was just exemplary of their entire philosophy. Hardworking, lethal, and to get the job done when it mattered. And what's for that for me, another point we can talk about later, is just the complete dichotomy in set piece approach. For us, I remember we had, you know, it was one of the worst examples of how to swing in the corner. Just so many of those shite short corners that we love to do. And for them, every time they have the ball, anywhere near a throw in, dangerous, we're under the cosh, and that pressure eventually led to their goal. So it was flat, the performance, in my opinion, but huge that we got the opening goal, and the point will prove too valuable. So I can't have too many complaints, but it was a match in which we really tested and performed reasonably well, and the result is what matters. And it's, as Mike mentioned, two really tough matches, 4 points in those. We'll definitely take that.
Okay, excellent, Max. All right, right back to you. Let's talk about Slavica's decisions with his starting 11 and his 18 overall. What were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it was interesting because Aite didn't have a great match against Villa, but did score that crucial goal. So it's interesting that he dropped to the bench. But I think in terms of both of them, Piazon and Aite, Piazon was anonymous for me. And when Aite came on, he looked off the pace. I think I was surprised that we didn't see Cabano. And one thing you mentioned, Russ, in the lead-up to the match was Ojo. He wouldn't even make the bench. And I think Slavica did state he was fit. So that was the biggest concern for me. I think that right wing position is the only one where there's that much debate. I think everything else was pretty uniform. We could have used a lot more dynamism, dynamic play on that right wing, I think.
Well, let me ask you, when you saw it and you saw Christie instead of Fredericks, were you okay with that?
Yes, yeah, so of course, the Christie and also the Odoi in the defense, that
instead
was another big change. Odoi, for me, I mean, to be fair, he gave away the first goal, in my opinion. That was a really poor clearance. But as a whole, I think he defended quite well. But making the small decision, small mistakes, that's really what cost us in the end. And I was very impressed by Christie. His assist for Mitrovic's goal was great vision. I do think Fredericks probably offers more in terms of the attacking role. But I think if you can bring Christie on in a midweek match in order to rest up Fredericks, and Callas for the match against Wolves on the weekend, that's a very good strategy. And I think that really shows why Slavica's recruitment in the January transfer window was effective, because we have these amazing options off the bench.
He does.
Yeah, so I think it more really was resting up Fredericks and Callas other than more of a tactical switch. But I think they really paid off in terms of Christie.
Okay. Mike, I want to get your thoughts on this. It's funny because in the lead up to the match, I had read some quotes from Slavica. I knew that he was going to be doing some changes. And for whatever reason, I wasn't expecting Christie. I'm not against it, but I wasn't expecting. What were your thoughts when you saw Slavica's changes from, say, the match that you went to against Aston Villa?
Well, I'd agree with the IET comments. I thought first half last week he was very, very poor. I would have taken him off. Of course, he scored that great goal. But for me, it still covered up a lot of cracks from his performance. So I wasn't surprised. And Piazon, I think, has been unlucky to be made sub last week. You know, he's put in some good performances recently. So no surprise for me for him to come back in. The Christie one, he had to play sooner or later, even if it's just to get him match fit. And Fredericks, who's who did play really well last week. You know, his performances since Christie signed have shown, you know, he's got competition. He's got to be on top of his game. And, you know, Jurkanović won Rest Fredericks, whose game is all about, you know, speed and stamina, really. And, you know, let's see what Christie can offer. And he gets an assist. And he was fairly solid from, you know, from watching the game, partly online during the week and then the whole game this morning. But I think Fredericks will come straight back in. But at least it shows what he can offer. And it says to Fredericks, you know, you've got to keep these performances up. And I thought there was an interesting comment. I don't know if you were going to talk about it later, but Jurkanović in the press preview today when he says Christie is the future, which I thought was quite an interesting comment. But the one for me was Adoree coming in for Kallis. I mean, I know Adoree's done okay at centre-back. And, yeah, he's fine for a game here and there. But, you know, he's third choice and he has been playing recently. So unless Kallis had a knock or he felt, you know, was it tactical? I just don't know. I wasn't happy with it. I didn't think he did that well in the first half. Second half, he was a lot better. But I was disappointed with it, and I was a bit worried in that first 20 minutes, and especially a spell there where we were, you know, right under the hammer. So that was the biggest surprise for me, the Adoree one. But, you know, it's a squad game, and you know, right. I remember last year we ran out of steam. So
that's right.
We've got players. You need to keep them match fit, match sharp, and so a little bit of rotation or resting, whatever you want to call it, is required. And you know, be it Bristol, be it Wolverhampton Wanderers, be it the next game, who knows, but you've got to fit these players in somewhere. They should all be players who, if they start a game, we shouldn't be worried. And it sort of made sense, but the Kallis Adoree one, yeah, I wasn't so sure about.
Okay, very good there, Mike. All right, let's now talk about some key moments and look at the first half. And Mike, I'm going to go right to you. We're going to jump right to the goal by Alexander Mitrovic. This is set up beautifully from Cyrus Christie. And I want to talk about this because what I noticed from here and his play in the game, and he was man of the match from the club, and I can definitely see why. There's a nice highlight package which will really show it even better for you. If you have not seen that, please check that out. But I want to get your thoughts on the goal and also the impact of Mitrovic, because Mike, he is a striker, and this is what we've been missing, what he has been able to offer in a very short period of time. Again, I don't want to go back to Chris Martin, but I'm just saying Chris Martin's a striker. Alexander Mitrovic is a striker. I actually, even a short period of time, I can see that he could potentially offer more than Chris Martin did, but I could see his value already, and you saw it in this goal, Mike. So I want to get your thoughts on the goal by Fulham here.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good work goal. And like I say, Christie gets his, gets the assist. And Mitrovic as a striker is in the right place. And, the thing about Mitrovic is, you know, he's not Chris Martin. And no, he's not Font or Kamara. And, you know, he's a biggish guy. He's not like Matt Smith. And because this guy's got skill. But he's also, this is below his level. For me, even before he joined us, you know, he's always looked to me as someone who's got that ability to play in the top leagues. And he's showing that, you know, last week against Villa, some of his layoffs, his touch, deft touches as well, you know. He's leading that line, and he is doing what Chris Martin did last year, which is, you know, he's that central cog. He's laying it off. The runners are around him. And it's not working perfectly at the moment because he's still finding his feet with the way the team play, and we're finding how he plays. But he's a quality striker, and we tried to get him last year in January, but then he got injured. It's good that he's here now, and obviously he's the number one striker for Salvisa, you know, being a countryman as well. He knows him, and he can control him, because we all know he comes with a reputation of a bit of a hothead. But very happy how he settled in. And with him, Kamara, and even Font, who I know gets a lot of criticism, you know, we've got options now, right, along with the other white guys.
A very good point there, my friend. All right. Over to you, Max. Let's now jump to the goal by Bristol City, because we're going to go back after that. We're going to talk about all the long throws and corners, because I want to spend a little time talking about that after we get to the goal. You've already said that this was not a great goal to give up. So let's talk about the goal by Bobby Reed in the 35th minute to equalize for Bristol City.
Yeah, the worst thing about this goal is that it was really coming, and there was just an inevitable feeling about that kind of period of the match when they had a spell of throw-ins, free kicks, corners, and they just kept battering us. And it seemed we really had difficulty clearing our lines, getting out of the defense. A low early ball came in. Adoy kind of had this – it wasn't even a clearance to me. It was a layoff into a Bristol City player. And Bobby Reed latched onto it, played a really intelligent 1-2. And it was a finish that wasn't – I mean, it was precise, but it seemed like Bettinelli didn't really move at all. But really fair play to Bobby Reed.
Yeah, that was a great goal by him.
It was a great goal by him, and it shows his quality. And he has scored, 14 goals this season? That's an impressive tally. And he was really hounding our back line all match. One thing I would say about the goal is that Adoy, that's the main thing for me, is that Adoy has to be better in that clearance.
Okay.
And maybe if that's Callis in there, it wouldn't happen.
That's an interesting take there, my friend. That's why I wanted to go to you about the goal there. And very interesting. It was very disappointing to see. But like you were saying, and I've been saying, it was coming. It was definitely coming based on what was going on before that. And now I want to go back and talk about this, because I want to get both of your views on how Fulham handled all of these long throws and corners, because they were coming at them for a decent amount of time. I want to say a good 5 to 7 minutes they were dealing with this. They could not, for whatever reason, get it out of their area at all. Again, they were struggling. Fulham were struggling. They were dealing with it, but they weren't able to get control. And this is a way that I thought Bristol City were definitely taking control of the match. And Mike, I want to get your thoughts on how Fulham handled these long throws from Magnussen, but it wasn't just that. It was also corners as well. How do you think they dealt with them?
Well, considering we see it as one of the weak bits of our game, I thought we changed the way we played a little bit on Wednesday style-wise. You know, I mean, if you look at how many actual clearances, and by that I mean just, you know, usually we look to keep the ball and lay it off and play it in tight areas.
Right.
But we made something like 50-odd clearances the other day, more than any other game we've played in this season. So, you know, that's what it was all about. It was rear guard action for that, you know, certainly that 7 or 8 minute period you're talking about. And it was total bombardment, wasn't it? But,
yeah,
you know, we pretty much held firm. There were certainly some scary moments. But we showed that we can dig in those kind of situations. I mean, I would have said going back to maybe not even as far as October or November, but, you know, every corner we give up, or every free kick around the area that's going to get pumped in, we're always thinking, oh, you know, we're going to lose a header here, the keeper's going to flap or whatever. And, you know, we still have that kind of soft underbelly, but, you know, everyone is fighting for every ball. So we should be happy with what we saw there. And Adoy, for all our criticisms of him, you know, did make the most the most clearances. So, you know, he did his job in that sense.
Do you know who else did? And I already mentioned this, is I thought Mitrovic was very good in these situations, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, I think he did something like 6 or 7. So, I mean, that's what he's there for. He's, you know, he is the big man coming back to help the centre backs and the rest of the team. And so it's a, you know, that added benefit of what he gives us defensively is a plus at both ends for us, really, isn't it? You know, that's what he's given us, those different options, and given defenders and attackers in some ways when he's defending, you know, something else to think about.
Very good there, my friend. All right, Max, I want to get your thoughts on this. I'm glad that we're talking about this, because there are two ways to look at it. The pressure kept coming and we weren't able to really get away from the pressure, but we were handling it. And I'm glad that Mike mentioned that, because that was something that I was thinking about. Even with all of that pressure, all of those long throws, those corners, they dealt with the pressure. It probably did affect what was coming up after that, which was the goal, but they handled it much better than, I want to say, in situations that I've seen earlier in the season. So that has to be a positive.
Yeah, for sure. I think definitely situations in the past, because we've seen Fulham go down 2-1, Concede two quick goals and then see the momentum change entirely. But it was crucial that we only gave up that one goal. And I'm glad you brought up Mitrovic as well, because his clearance, I don't remember exactly when it was, but it was towards that period, almost saved a clear goal. It looked like he threw his body out there, and he left that kind of desire, especially from strikers on the defensive end of things. And yeah, I mean, for sure, it's a tough place to go to. They're an aggressive team. They match up very well to us. They're the kind of team we don't like to play. So more and more, this is seeming like a quality point. And although I think there's the initial frustration of giving up a lead, I think that the draw is something we should be proud of.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, quickly on to the second half. The match ends 1-1, so there are no goals. But there were a few opportunities from Fulham, and certainly a few opportunities for Bristol City. I'll just mention them. You have the shot by Mitrovic in the 50th minute, and then later on, you have the situation with Ryan Sessegnon setting up Mitrovic, and this looks like it's inches away from him getting on it and scoring a goal, but unfortunately he just missed it. That was probably the opportunity of the second half for Fulham, and the match ends 1-1. And Max, I just want to get your thoughts. As we're watching the second half, did you feel that Fulham had a chance to win, or were you feeling that they were holding on for a draw? I want to get your view.
Honestly, it's really neither, in my opinion.
Okay.
I didn't feel like we were under immense pressure from Bristol City, but on the other hand, did we have any shots on target in the second half? None that immediately spring to mind. We might have had a couple, but none that really seriously.
The one by Mitrovic in the 50th minute.
Yeah, and that really says a lot. That for me, I was most disappointed by the kind of flat attacking performance in the second half. Obviously, it's going to be tough to go somewhere away and try to push for that second goal when you're also going to have to weather an attack. But there just wasn't much. I didn't see the movement there. I don't think really Sessegnon, for me, I mentioned him as a key player before the match. He looked tired. And I think we have to realize he's 17 years old and he's played the most out of anyone on that team. It has to catch up to him at some point. And listen, I think it showed today that he can't really play that intense level in this 46-match season. Because normally we kind of look to Sessegnon to be our guy in those late moments, and he just didn't really show up. And it's nothing unfair on him, because you can't depend on him, because he is still a teenager. And yeah, that chance with Mitrovic probably was our best opportunity for sure. And did he probably overhit that pass a tad bit? Because he did have a lot of space, owing to that mistake from the Bristol City right back. So, but I'm not going to be too critical of Sessegnon, because he's been by far our best player this season and our most valuable player. I'm not going to knock on him for that. But what I'm going to say about the team is that I didn't see one player really stepped up and kind of took the game by the scruff of its neck when it was in that kind of fluid period when it's even and someone could go and win it. We never saw us as likely to score.
Okay, very good. Mike, back over to you. I believe you have something that you wanted to talk about in regards to Ryan Sessegnon.
Yeah, I did. I've got this thing about Sessegnon. It's, take nothing away. He's been a massive player for us this season. And I know there's disagreements about whether he's a left back, a left winger, striker, whatever you want to see him as. But I, since targets come in, we've had four games in a row now where Sessegnon has played as that wide left guy. And I don't think we're seeing the Sessegnon that we've seen previously. And I think Max's point about him playing lots of games is a very valid one. But I actually think the way he played at left back, then for some games played left wing, then went back to left back,
right,
kept him fresh, kept the expectation levels of him when he moved up at a realistic level. But now everyone is expecting him to be at that level all the time at left wing. And as a 17-year-old, that's never going to happen. And so, and then for the first time this season, you're seeing people say, oh, maybe he shouldn't start. Maybe he should get subbed. Whereas you go back five games, when was anyone saying that? And so I always saw the advantage of what we were doing with him, teaching him the game at left back, giving him some games and then putting him back, picking and choosing when he would, be the surprise package. And he's not that now. And so the pressure on him to produce is enormous. And also, in some ways, because we expect so much from him now, and that he should start every game, you are writing off the left side now. So whereas you had Cabano, he's not getting a kick about. You know, I think he's come on a sub twice in the or three. Well, I think all his previous appearances now are sub. He hasn't started for quite a while. You've got Aiti in the mix. You've got Piazon. And so the only time you're going to see, Session or that side not being used now is if Sessegnon doesn't start, gets subbed or goes to left back. And with Target playing well, you don't see him going back to the left back, do you? So it's a real tricky one for Jokanović now and for Sessegnon. He's got that position. He's got to deliver it or he will find himself dropped, and we wouldn't have been saying that 5 games ago.
That's a great point, Mike. And I also want to ask you this, because as he gets this reputation that he continues to build, scoring all these goals, and I said this to Max on a prior episode, I want your thoughts on this. When opposition managers are looking at Fulham, they're probably game planning to take away Ryan Sessegnon. So does he have to figure out how to counteract what other teams are doing to him?
The thing is, Sessegnon, and this is going to be quite controversial probably, and you might get some comments. I don't actually think Sessegnon is that great a left winger. Him and Target have built up quite a good reputation, so Sessegnon runs into space. But actually taking people on, that's not Sessegnon's game. What he does is he's scoring goals because he's got that, if you like, that Sheringham, that Lineker thing, where he gets into space. And like he did last week, he didn't have a great game last week, was shackled by their right back, but found space and got the goal. And he's done that time and time again, almost as a goal hanger at times, the amount of goals he scores from about 2 inches.
Right.
But, it's an interesting one for him. I just don't think he's not a winger in that sense. He's not a wide left player for me anyway. I don't see him as that great as someone to take people on. Great goal scorer and, he can get the crosses in. But it's a delivery from a player. So last year it was Aluko found him lots of times. Target has found him a couple of times for him to get crosses in now. But he's got to learn the game almost again now because he's a regular in that position.
Okay, very interesting there, man. Thank you for sharing your thoughts on it. All right, let's transition. Let's preview the upcoming match against Wolves. Max just let me know that, unfortunately, he has to leave. So I'm going to start with you, Max. I just want to get your thoughts on Wolves ahead of this match, and then Mike and I will finish up the show.
Yeah, sadly, I do have to go. But I would love to hear my opening thoughts on Wolves. I think playing Wolves now is very different than the way we played Wolves in early November or early October, back in the fall when we were on a poor run of form. I think Wolves have shown a bit of vulnerability in recent weeks. They haven't been blowing away opponents, and in midweek they gave up a late equalizer to Norwich, which was interesting because Norwich aren't necessarily that strong of a side, and you wouldn't normally expect Wolves. They're so far ahead of everyone else, but you wouldn't expect a team in first to kind of show those kind of cracks. And Fulham, of course, we were on this 11-match unbeaten run. This is a great time to play Wolves. We're on amazing form. Ruben Neves, as I know you guys are going to talk about later, one of their key players, they're really marquee signing. That really showed the revolution that's going on there. He's out. He's suspended for this match. A very similar situation to what we saw last week against Villa when Grealish and Adoma were both out. One thing I would say is, though, Wolves, almost every single player on their side possesses quality, so maybe just having Neves out is not going to be enough. But maybe in the past, where this match really would have been seen as getting a win is a long shot, I think it's very much a possibility. If we can, we've shown in the past, one of our strengths is that we play well against the top sides. Last season, we did a double over Newcastle, did a double over Huddersfield. We play well against good sides, and that's what really gives me hope going to this match, that we can get a positive result, especially considering last week's win against Villa.
Okay, very good. Before you go, what's your prediction?
Prediction? Listen, I can never predict anything else than a win. I have this thing. If I predict anything else, I just feel bad about myself. It's naivety, sure. It's superstition, but I'm feeling good about this match. No Neves for Wolves is a big loss for me, and especially the former in against the top sides. I think we're going to go from strength to strength. I think it's going to be Fulham 1, Wolves 0.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right. Max, thank you as always for joining us on Cottage Talk, my friend.
Yeah, thank you. And I cannot wait to hear the show later on. See you, Mike. See you, Ross. Come on, Fulham.
All right.
Yeah, cheers, Max. Right.
Thanks.
Cheers.
Cheers, Max. Have a good day. Thank you very much.
Bye.
All right. That was Max Cohen. And thank you, Max, for joining us. And Mike, it'll just be you and I to finish up the show. But we're going to now get a little bit more into this preview of this upcoming match. And what I'm going to do, Mike, is I'm just going to share some characteristics from whoscored.com on Wolves, and I thought that'd be a good way to start, and then get your opening thoughts on them. And let's just start with just some characteristics, like I mentioned. Strengths: very strong at shooting from direct free kicks, finishing, scoring chances, counterattacks, all very strong there. Strong at creating chances using through balls, creating chances through individual skill, creating scoring chances. Again, all strong, and stealing the ball from the opposition, strong. Weaknesses: weak at defending against long shots, defending set pieces, and they're very weak avoiding fouling in dangerous areas. Their style: play possession football. They take long shots, short passes, attempt through balls often, consistent first 11, playing in their own half, and opponents play aggressively against them. They do play a 3-4-3 formation. Mike, I want your thoughts on that and how full matchup against a 3-4-3. One last thing before I get your opening take here is let's look at the league table. And Wolverhampton Wanderers are first, 22 victories, 7 draws, only 4 losses. They've scored 59. They've only given up 26. And they're in a plus 33 goal differential and are on 73 points. Fulham are currently fifth, 15 victories. They have 11 draws, 7 losses, 55 goals scored. They've given up 37 and a plus 18 goal differential and are on 56 points. So that tells you where both teams are in the league. All right, Mike, over to you. Just your opening thoughts on Wolves ahead of this match.
Well, I mean, they've, you know, clearly been the best team in the league this year. I mean, they're doing better than Newcastle were doing this time last year. And yeah, I mean, it's, you know, they're going to be champions. And, you know, the money they spent, I know lots of people, I don't want to get too much into the old FFP arguments, but, you know, they're able to do it. They're able to do it because of the way the club's been run over the last 3 years. And they started at a very low base, and that's allowed them to, you know, build and spend and sign players like Neves. And, you know, they're reaping the rewards, definitely. And, I've seen people say about how their form has deteriorated recently. Well, I actually did something. They've scored more points in the last 17 games than they, or this half, the second half of the season so far, than they did in the first half of games. So they're consistent and they play a good style. And it's interesting when you're talking about those matchups on who scored. It's almost a mirror image of us in some ways, you know, possession football.
Yep.
They play more in their own half, so they keep the ball similar to the way we did last year, maybe, you know, playing. We've changed it a little bit this year. We're not right in front of the goalkeeper keeping the ball all the time, but Wolves do play deep. And actually, I'd looked at some stat, and they're actually in the opposition's last third less than any other team in the Championship. You know, for a team that's top, they pick and choose their moment to attack, and that's what they're good at. And you know, we're going to have to be on our ball for that. And the formation you talk about is an interesting one. You
yes.
don't see it that often at all. And so we're going to be outnumbered in the middle. Will Jokanović change it? I don't know. I mean, you know, there's an argument to say, you know, play to your own strengths. We did that last week, and I think we should do it again. You know, we have our system, and let Wolves take us on, not necessarily the other way around. So I think the interesting thing really is going back to the left side. You know, we, because of Sessegnon, and now because of Target and Ream as well, because everything goes through him really at the start of the build up, goes to him, tends to go to McDonald, but we tend to go down the left more than the right. And then they also play down the right as well. You know, they have Doherty, who I think is an unsung hero, you know, a very dangerous player. And,
yes.
You know, the other foreigners, they get all the headlines. But you know, we have to be aware of him. He is very dangerous. So left first, you know, left versus their right is going to be an interesting battle to see who wins there, because I think who wins that battle wins the game tomorrow, quite frankly. Yeah, no, a dangerous team all over. You know, Jossa in the middle, Carvalho on the left. We've got Douglas as well. So, but the main thing is they are missing their main playmaker. So we've only got the other guy. I never pronounce his name right. Stace. You know, he does a similar job for them. So
yes, he does.
They're top of the league. You know, we have to respect them, but also play our own game. We're top of form, so nothing to be too afraid of, really, quite frankly.
Well, what's interesting, Mike, and I was going back and forth if I should share this, but I think this just tells you the type of style that Fulham play and the type of style of Wolverhampton Wanderers play. And I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I have some more stats for you, because I like to do this comparison between the two teams and see where they are in the league. And it's very interesting. And I'm going to just share this with you because it kind of goes to what you've already talked about. And again, all this information is from whoscored.com. Goals. Wolves are first in the league with 59. Fulham are second, Mike, with 55. Shots per game. Wolves are ninth at 13.3. Fulham are tied at third with 13.9. Shots on target, though, this is the difference for Wolves. They're third in the league at 4.6. Fulham are tied at sixth with 4.4. Possession. Wolves are sixth in the league at 52.2, and Fulham are first at 57.4. Passing accuracy. This is a stat that you always have told me that's an important one. Fulham are first in the league at 82.6, but guess what? Wolves are second at 80.5. Yeah. Okay? Short passes. Yeah. Another stat that you always look at, Mike, that you've always told me about. Look at short passes. Fulham are first in the league at 479. Guess what? Wolves are tied at third with 421. So I think the stats really tell you everything that you said at the beginning, Mike, that where similar teams, they do it a little bit differently. But this has the makings of a real football match to me.
Yeah, I think the guy who sits two behind me is going to be quite upset because he's very much old school. Get the ball forward, launch it long, all that kind of stuff.
I don't think you're going to
have
see
a
that.
Very frustrating day. No, I don't think we are. But, you know, the two most skillful teams in the Championship are going to face off tomorrow.
That's right.
I had a quick look actually at our lineup last time we played them. And I can only see maybe five, possibly six of that starting lineup facing Wolves tomorrow. So, you know, you have Ream, Johansson, Session on McDonald.
Right.
Adoy, I don't think he'll start. Aiti might start. You know, Norwood, Fredericks will start. So that's five definites. Cabano, unlikely. And Fonte and Button definitely won't. So, you know, it's half a new team. We're going to be starting with against.
Great point,
them.
Mike.
So, you know, we've evolved, we've changed. They haven't as much because, I mean, one of their strengths is they've kept quite a tight, you know, squad using a limited number of players. I mean, I was looking at the minutes some of their players have played, and you know, they're on high numbers. They've got a hard core there who have been doing a lot of the work. So, you know. It's going to be a really good game. I'm looking forward to it. This is what you go to football for. This is why the Championship is great. There is no easy game. There is no easy game in the Premier League. But what you have is competitive games. And after Villa, you know, last week, followed Bristol City and now Wolves at home, you know, it's a great time to be watching Fulham and Championship football as well, because... you know, whatever you think about the strengths of all the other teams, it's competitive. And that's what we pay our money for. Well, that's what I pay my money for, to be entertained.
Great point there, my friend. All right. Let's talk about key players for Fulham. Who needs to play well for them to get this victory on Saturday?
The two centre-backs, definitely, and Target and McDonald. So the reason I say Target is the old, you know, it's the face-off between left and...
Yep.
Our left side and their right side, and the way they slot the balls through. So Callis and Ream, a lot of anticipation is going to be required from them to make the right move to cut out the passes, because you know, that's what they're strong at. And McDonald for controlling Jota in some ways, you know, keeping an eye on him. But yeah, for me, the three of the fullback, three of the defenders, and McDonald, who for me again is the he may not wear the armband every week, but he is the linchpin of everything we do as far
leader.
As I'm concerned.
He's absolutely the leader to me, Mike. And nothing against Tom Kearney, yeah, but I think when he's out there, he is taking charge, and I think they're definitely going to need that on Saturday. Very good point. Okay. What do Fulham need to do to win this match? We're talking about the key players. How do they beat this team?
Well, as I said, they should play. We should play our own game, not be scared. You know, I mean, they're a good side, but you know, and you're showing respect, but you know, let's take the game to them just as we did against Villa last week. And the other thing is, really, is we have to take our chances. They don't give up many shots on target at all.
No, they don't.
Or you know, chance for anyone. So if we get that one chance or two chances, you know, we need to take one of them. We really do. So yeah, that's how we win the game, is be ourselves, don't be scared. But if we get a chance, we've got to take it. And so Cesc or Mitrov or whoever the other guy is who plays up front, yeah, if they get that chance, they've got to put it away.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, what would be your starting 11 for this match?
What would be my starting 11? Well, I mean,
your starting 11.
Bettinelli. I think the back four picks itself, because I would bring Callis and Fredericks back in. Target sounds like he's fit, along with Ream. So that's the back four. Three musketeers in midfield, McDonald, Kearney and Johansson. And I think you've got to go with Mitrovic again up top. Sessegnon, as I say, picks himself. But yeah, it's the other position. Do you go with Aiti, who for me, like I say, didn't play great last week? Piazon didn't do an awful lot midweek. Cabano, I'm not a great fan of starting games, but actually I'd like to see a bit more pace. I don't see Kamara being able to start a game wide. So I don't know. I might give Cabano his head. Let him have a go. Because you've still got the other guys on the bench. So, yeah, just to inject a bit more pace. And Jokanović talks about using all his players. He hasn't started a game for a long time, Cabano, so he may be due.
Okay, very good there, Mike. All right, very interesting. Okay. All right, time for predictions. Let's
start
with...
Go ahead. Yeah, let me just throw something in, though.
Go ahead.
Having read the interview with Christie, don't be shocked to see a Christie Fredericks down the right somewhere.
Mike, let me ask you. I want to see that. And my question to you is, if we see that, does that mean that we're going to see Christie in front of Fredericks, or vice versa?
See, I don't think Fredericks is a very good... Fredericks' key to him is pace. He doesn't really have the tricks to beat people. He's got to have space to run past the fullback, and he does that better if he is the fullback with no one in front of him, and he's from the halfway line. So if we do it, I think it'll be... see it right back, Fredericks in front, but I don't think it'll work.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
That does, Mike. Thank you. All right. Time for predictions. Let's start with the Cutters Talk Twitter poll that I did earlier at 115 votes. Win was at 61%, Mike. Draw was at 26%, and loss was at 13%. Okay, while I pull up some of the comments from the Cutters Talk Facebook page with their predictions, going to go to you, my friend. What's your prediction?
I'm going to go for a 1-1, actually. I think it will be 1-1 tomorrow. I think we will cancel each other out. So whether that's the right result we want, probably not. We could do a win to cement a place, but against the leaders, probably take that. But yeah, 1-1.
Okay. I've been going back and forth on this, and I generally go for a victory, but this is the team that's in first and deserves to be. Mike, I'm going to go with you. I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw. I can see us getting a point from this. I would love to see all 3 points, but I can totally see a draw. And I've seen many people predicting draws, and I agree with it. So I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw. And would it be disappointing? I don't know if I call it disappointing. I think that we need all 3 points, but I think that you would take it against the league leaders. And this is a team that's Premier League ready. So I don't think it's the worst result, but I do think that we generally need all 3 points. All right. Time for predictions on the Cutters Talk Facebook page. Let's start with Roger Lewis. He has 3-2 to Fulham. Eden Gordon has 2-1 to Fulham. Matt Jones has 2-1 to Fulham. Gary Cooper, 3-1 to Wolves. Chris Davidson says, I'm going for 2-2. Stephen O'Keefe, 2-1 to Fulham. Let's see. Joe Lopes, 4-2 to Fulham. Paul Anger is going for 2-2. Alf Russell, Fulham to win 5-0. I don't see that happening. Very interesting. Tim Webster, 1-0 to Fulham. And Michael Garrigan is going 4-1 to Wolves. And there are others, but we just don't have time to go through all of them. Thank you, everyone, for your predictions. And I'm sorry if I did not get to all of them. All right, Mike, listen, thank you so much for doing this show with me. It's been a while since I've had you on. I miss talking to you. You're a very busy person, but thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, no problem, Russ. I really enjoyed it. And yeah, I need to get back into it, doing some more shows. But once work calms down a bit, then I'll be able to make myself more available.
Okay, well, it's always great having you on, Mike, and anytime that you can do it, that would be fantastic. But it is time to go, and I want to thank Max for joining us earlier. Unfortunately, Max had to drop off, but that's okay. Whenever Max can do it, it's always a great show as well. All right, for Max Cohen and Mike Gregg, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.